Everybody, and welcome to Game of Thrones with Jay, Jack, and Nick. My name is Jay.
I'm Nick.
And I'm going to mispronounce at least one thing on this podcast.
And welcome to the show. Hello, gentlemen. Very excited. We're six episodes in. We're going downhill now on this sixth season of Game of Thrones.
It goes so fast. I don't like it.
And then 10 more months of waiting.
Yeah, that sucks.
And then it's pretty much the end, right? Nick, you know more about this than I do, but so they're going to have one final season broken up into two smaller seasons or something like that?
That's what the rumor is that two more seasons, one seven episodes, one six episodes. But I'm not sure if that's confirmed yet. Yeah.
We'll see. We'll see. But we're here to talk about this episode now, episode six. Blood of My Blood, was that the title?
It was.
Look at me. I'm almost as good as Nick. Almost. But actually not even close. So we are here to talk about the latest episode. We also have some listener feedback we're going to jump into. And we also have everybody's favorite segment, What Happens in the Book Stays in the Book, where we'll break down maybe some of the differences from the book and the TV show, especially now since the show seems to be going past where most of the books are. But it's always my favorite segment. And we'll leave that towards the end in case the people that maybe think the books are spoilery and vice versa. You can end there if you want to end there. But
I'm going to leave at that point.
Perfect. But before we get any of that, we want to thank the people that make this show possible, our patrons, over at patreon.com/JayandJack. If you'd like to become a patron today, you can go to jayandjack.com, click on the link to become a patron. We have over 129 patrons that make this show possible, contributing from $1 all the way up. And without their contributions, these shows wouldn't be possible. So if you'd like to become a patron, you can become one today. You can see our full thank you list on our website at changeject.com.
Hey, is that Joffrey crying in the background?
No, it's baby Zach. And probably not going to pick it up on our actual studio mic. But
okay.
The other mic, Jack, you can probably hear it. But don't worry. It probably won't show up on the final edit, but I've said that before and I've been wrong before. And then one last thing, as we've had for a month or so now, a partnership with Loot Crate. If you want over $45 worth of geeky goodness for less than $20 sent to your door each month, like t-shirts, toys, and other fun stuff, you can sign up today over at lootcrate.com/JayandJack. Use the promo code JayandJack to get a special discount. All right, I'm done hawking stuff. Let's get into this episode.
You forgot about this month's spoiler. This month's special is a screaming baby. So that's in the box. Everybody gets a screaming baby. So who wouldn't want, for $20 a month, a screaming baby?
Oh, man. All right, Nick, let's jump into this episode.
Okay. So we open up with Mira pulling Bran away on the sled, kind of like where we left it.
Yeah.
Last time we saw them. And Bran is in his visions because his eyes are white. Mm-hmm. And we're given a long, really quick series of what he's seeing in these flashes. And I don't know if these are many that are just kind of do it really quickly, or are these really going this fast in his visions? I don't know. But the first thing we see is pyromancers storing wildfire into below the Red King's Landing in the Red Keep.
Okay.
That was after the dragons died off, this is how the Targaryens kept hold of power, by having wildfire, because it was basically liquid fire, and it was the only last power they had to threaten the people with. The next thing we see is just a dragon flying, which is a real quick scene. Then we see the Mad King. And in this one, it goes from like a red background to a black background.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what the symbolism of that is, but it goes really quick. Just like he's kind of happy in like the first little half second, and then the second one, he's really stern.
Mm-hmm.
The next one is the Night's King at Hardhome lifting the whites up, bringing the dead back to life.
And we saw that last season, right?
We did. We saw that, yeah, at the Battle of Hardhome last season. Then in season one, we see Bran falling out of the broken tower at Winterfell, which made him cripple.
Mm-hmm.
Then we see a quick little landscape scene of a desert and clouds going by, which I don't know if that's just for ambience or what. Then we see Catelyn Stark getting her throat slit at the Red Wedding down at the Frey's home
Always a joyful memory.
Yeah, exactly. It goes back to the dragon flying again over a town. Then Dany at the end of season one with the young dragons just hatched sitting on her shoulder after she was burned at Drogo's funeral. Then the Night's King carrying the Craster's baby and then turning it with his finger into a White Walker. And then Ned getting his head chopped off at King's Landing at the end of season one.
A lot of stuff. Really the only new scene that we saw.
We're not done yet.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, we still got plenty of them left. But, like, that was just any thoughts of those.
Okay. Of that, the only new thing is seeing the Mad King, right? And the liquid fire. What is it called again? I'm sorry. Fire's breath.
Yeah, the wildfire.
Wildfire. So any significance there, or is it just more of kind of showing this backstory, which has kind of been a theme of this season, is seeing a lot of the backstory?
Yeah, it's kind of Bran catching up really quickly with things that he was not witness to. So he's learning about all these things that happened. Obviously the wildfire storage, the Mad King when he went crazy. He's seeing even the White Walkers, because he doesn't know about this. So he's seeing all these visions of how things have become to be.
Mm-hmm. Does he know that his dad's been killed? I don't remember. Does he know that?
I think he was still in. Yeah, he does know that. He was still in Winterfell when Ned was killed.
Okay, that's right.
And if you're hearing weird noises right now, people, it's actually Jack. His headphones are rubbing against his shirt. So
yeah, I'm not eating candy like I was accused on the last episode.
But if you could pull the cord away from your shirt, Jack, that'd be helpful.
I'd forgotten about it. I'm doing that as we speak.
You're such a fidgety podcaster. All right, sorry.
And then it comes out of the vision just for a brief second to show Mira pulling Bran, and she's starting to struggle with just holding the weight of pulling him.
Yeah.
Then it goes back to his vision. We see that same desert scene again with just the desert with the clouds kind of going over quickly. It goes back to the dragon flying over the town again, the Night's King and the baby turning it into a White Walker again. A quick little shot of ravens flying out of the woods, again with a wildfire storage. And then we see the Mad King again, but this time he's screaming, "Burn them all."
Yep.
And this was his last thing that he was screaming, that Jaime Lannister has testified to, is that before he kills him, that's all he kept saying over and over again was, "Burn them all, burn them all." The next thing we see is Wildfire now actually exploding and going through the storage unit. And this one was interesting because, as far as I know, there's no more Wildfire left. Tyrion used it all for the defense of King's Landing at the end of season two.
Mm-hmm.
So where is this wildfire coming from, and where is it going through the Red Keep to burn it down? Because if you remember in season two, when Dany is going through Carth, and she's going through the House of the Undying, she does in her vision see the Red Keep burn down, as in the ruins of it. It's got holes in it. So is this a future vision, perhaps, that he's seeing how the Red Keep falls or destroyed?
So where would more of this fire come from?
I have no idea. I mean, the pyromancers is a guild kind of a way that makes it, because Tyrion says that in season two. They're like, we do make it, but I always believed it was kind of a lost art. It's really hard and time consuming to make it.
Yeah.
So I can't. It's possible that somebody starts to make it again. Maybe if Tommen or future powers, maybe they start making it again here in this season or towards the end of this season.
That'd be interesting. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay, so then we see Jaime Lannister then approaching the Mad King with his sword drawn. And then we have the two most interesting ones of all these to me were, you see the young Ned Stark from earlier this season at the Tower of Joy saying, "Where is my sister?" And then the one scene that was really neat that I haven't heard anyone comment on yet was, you do see a man's hand covered in blood and then a woman's hand next to it, not moving at all, laid out on a table of blood. And I just assume this is possibly Ned once he gets inside the Tower of Joy, speaking, or at least seeing his sister.
Okay. It,
a lot of these are really quick, so you have to kind of almost slow down the scenes.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think we'll get to see more of that scene? Since that's kind of where this season started, with kind of the flashbacks, or Bran going with the Three-Eyed Raven back in time and seeing the Tower of Joy. Do you think we'll get more of that, or is that the farthest you think we'll go with that?
I think there's no doubt we'll get another vision of this scene. It might not be in this season. It could be next season.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this is definitely an important key piece of the past that the viewers and the book readers need to know in order to establish some kind of context that I won't get into.
Well, do you want to talk about the theories about who these kids could be if she did have a kid, or do you want to save that for what happens if the book stays in the book?
We can. Let's just, if you can remember, let's talk. Is it
theories or spoilers?
Well, they're theories. Well, nobody knows for sure, right?
Okay.
It's a theory, yeah. It's the most popular theory out there. Most people, if they've have been spoiled on this theory, which is the R plus L equals J.
Yeah, why don't we save it for the back, end of the book.
Okay.
Right, we'll save it for what happens in the book, stays in the book, R plus L equals J, if you know what the happy haps is on that. But there's another popular theory being added on to that, I'm sure maybe you're aware of, Nick, that we can talk about as well.
Okay, let me just type it over here. R plus J. Okay. All right, let me get back up to the beginning. All right. So, all right. Okay, and then we have Jaime Lannister actually killing the Mad King, which is the next scene after the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then Rob Stark being stabbed by Roose Bolton at the Red Wedding. A very far away shot of Jaime Lannister stabbing the Mad King while he's on the floor in the Red Keep. Another scene of a crow flying. Rob Stark looking at Catelyn Stark just before he dies at the Red Wedding. The Children of the Forest creating the Night's King by jabbing the
Dragonglass,
because I'm going to say obsidian, into the chest. White Walker fighting Jon Snow at Hardhome. Jaime Lannister sitting on the Iron Throne, and this is an interesting thing, because he actually sat on it after he killed the Mad King, as in kind of like, I'm the new king, and then Ned Stark comes in and makes him get off the Iron Throne.
Where did we find that at? Was that in the first book, or?
I think he might have been said it in season one.
I think that
for a moment he actually was tempted to sit on the Iron. Yeah, and he sits down, and Ned Stark, you know, comes in, and his holier than thou attitude made him get off the Iron Throne. Then we see Wildfire once again continuing to burn through the storage keep in the Red Keep. The dragon flying over the city once again. Dany and the Young Dragons once again. The Night's King creating the White Walker again. Okay, and this one was interesting. I wasn't sure if this was still another flashback of Jaime killing the Mad King or if it was a different scene altogether. You see a shadow, two shadows on the wall. And the guy who's getting stabbed, it looks as if he's on his knees praying. And then you have another guy jabbing the sword through his back. And at first I kind of thought, oh, it was just a continuation. But we've already seen Jaime kill the Mad King.
Mm-hmm.
So is this a future scene as well of someone getting stabbed while they're praying? It could be, you know, the High Sparrow. You don't know.
Or any one of his, you know, now we can learn later in the episode with Marjorie. It could be Marjorie or Tommen now that they're, you know, become one with the church.
Very true. Yeah. But this time, now we see a lot of ravens. What do they call it? Do they call it a school or?
No, a murder. A murder of crows?
That's murder. A murder of ravens?
Is it a murder of ravens of crows and crows? I know it's a murder of crows, but.
Right. Well, they're the same. They're the same thing.
Cool.
Flock of seagulls.
Flock of seagulls. Then we see another scene again of the Children of the Forest creating the Night's King. Wildfire once again.
Pause. That was confirmed, by the way, that was the Night's King. We talked about it last week a little bit.
Okay.
But it's confirmed that was the creation of the Night's King. So I brought it. Well, maybe it wasn't. I was wrong. So there you go.
Well, it's a good thought. You know, you had me stumped for a second.
I didn't believe it for a second.
Jack knows better.
And then we see an actual present time scene of the whites chasing through the woods, pursuing Bran and Mira. And then it cuts back to Bran and Mira. Mira's tired. She's exhausted. She falls down. And then she seems to have given up, and she goes back to Bran. We're laying on his pallet and puts her hands on his face. But he's still in his vision, so then returns back to the vision. We see Bran falling once again from the broken tower at Winterfell. Another scene of the wildfire storage, the Mad King. Now we have a series more of the whites at the Battle of Hardhome. We get a lot more of these in this section, whereas in the whites are knocking down the wall at Hardhome, the Night's King raising the dead at Hardhome, and then Bran and two episodes back looking at the Army of the Dead. Then a quick flashback to the whites pursuing them in the woods, Battle of Hardhome. And then we see back to season two, the end, where the White Walkers were walking towards the Fist of the First Men in the north. The Night's King looking down upon the battle at Hardhome, seeing Jon Snow fighting with the White Walker. And then the last scene we see is, well, actually the last two, you have Bran being touched by the Night's King, and then the whites finally catching up to where Bran and Mira are, and then Bran comes out of his vision.
So
there's a lot of information.
Yeah,
in that 1 minute or
thank you, Nick.
It's like a whole episode.
Basically, yeah. Thank you, Nick, for breaking all of that down. So what is the significance of this stuff here? Is it a lot of just throwaway? Because it seemed to focus one on the Walkers and the Whites and the Mad King and Tower of Joy. I would think it's there for a purpose. But how much do you think this talks about, you know, stories to come here?
I think it's very little. I mean, there is little hints of possible future things in there, but I think it's mostly Bran learning how to use his power and catching up on events that he has not actually witnessed himself. So he's learning the same way the original Three-Eyed Crow did about all the events that are leading up to the time they're in now. So exactly, seeing the murder of the Mad King, and I'm sure we'll get more to that to come. He's seeing how the White Walkers were created and how powerful the Night's King is by he can create this incredible army, and how will Bran be able to handle it when the time comes. And you know, you hear him say that later in the episode that he didn't learn much, you know, and so he has to learn how to use this power that he's been given.
So what's you know, I think we talked about earlier in this season that the reason they can go back in time and look is they're looking through the eyes of these trees. And he's holding on to the roots. How is he doing it now without being connected to one of these tree roots?
That's just the way of television.
Is his power different since he's also can warg into animals? Is it like this? Is his a little bit more advanced? Or
warging is more common than a green seer. So warging is being able to go into an animal or even a human being, as we've seen in through Hodor.
We got some criticism for saying Hodor, but it's Hodor.
Hodor!
And then a green seeing, which is being able to look through the trees to see the future and the past. And so the theory, like, at least I like the theory that I don't think you can actually time travel, but from having both of these powers, is it possible for him to have a green seeing into the past or the future and then warg into a human being in the past or future to influence what they're doing?
Oh.
We don't know.
Well, because, I mean, if we kind of saw if there's some kind of connection into the past who's warging into the present with what happened to Hodor, which, by the way, all the memes and things with Hold the Door and Hodor have been incredible. I think my favorite is the Hodor doorstop.
Do you see the guy in the subway that was doing it?
Yeah.
he's lucky he didn't get shot.
Hold the door. But anyway.
I'm trying to think.
I do want to talk about, there is some, it's typical kind of book readers being upset about something, but the difference between the Mad King and the description of the in the book compared to what we actually saw in this episode in the flashes, But anything unique or special there in what we saw, Nick, that maybe we didn't know before?
I mean, the show changes with, I mean, even the Three-Eyed Raven was changed, you know, from character to character. Like, usually when their first introduction in a show, they're not exactly accurate. The same as Children of the Forest or anything else. Because, I mean, yeah, he's supposed to be really skinny and frail at this point because he doesn't really eat. He's paranoid. His fingernails are extremely long. His hair hasn't been washed and it's knotted up. I mean, he is a madman at this point. So this king presented here was a little bit more presentable.
Like they didn't find the right kind of actor yet.
Right.
A Gary Busey type, if you will.
Well, that would be the perfect casting.
Can you imagine Gary Busey's?
He's a great actor. He's just crazy.
Maybe that's what makes him a great actor.
That's true. That's true. Well, actually, I think it was the motorcycle accident where he had brain trauma. But besides that.
Well, that and he's experimented with a few drugs.
Yes. Just a few.
Oh, but to go to your question about the trees in the book, that's another reason why, you know, a lot of the trees have been cut down because, you know, their faith of the seven in the south. And whereas in the north, you have a lot more of the weirwood trees with the faces. So you can see a lot more of the past through these trees. Whereas there's only a handful, like there's one in King's Landing of the tree, usually just in the royal houses. There's the Isle of Faces, which is near River Run and Harrenhal, which is an island full of them. But as in everything south of the north, there's not many weirwood trees left with faces on them. So that's like it's one of the things in the book. They can't see that much in the current times. They only see things in the past because the trees were still there then.
Okay. Now, was there a tree at the Tower of Joy? I mean, I guess there had to have been. Or is the TV show kind of deviating from that limitation?
Exactly, because you're in Dorne where the Tower of Joy is. It's in northern Dorne still, but it's in Dorne. There's not a lot of trees in Dorne. Mm-hmm. And the Tower of Joy vision is Ned's vision.
Yeah.
While he's under the influence of Milk of the Poppy.
Yeah.
So there's no weirwood trees, as far as I know, down there at the time.
Okay. So I guess that limitation, we could say, maybe just doesn't exist in the TV show.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I do really like that element because then it kind of shows the North is more, if they have a religion, it's more kind of pagan based. Would that be if we had to have an allegory
exactly.
to it?
Exactly. It's more pagan ish. Yeah. Just belief in nature. They kind of kept to the old ways because they're descendants of the first men, the Northmen are. And mm-hmm. there's two different invasions. That's why when they introduced the king, you know, he's the king of the first men and descendant of the Andals. That's because you have the first men that come first, which is what the Children of the Forest fought against. And they mostly stayed in the north. And because not a lot of people migrated to the north because it's just a wild country. There's not a lot of land for farming and mm-hmm. it's just a different style of life. And the Andals are the ones that are the south who brought over the faith of the seven. And they weren't ever able to conquer the north. So that's why you have the differences between the old ways and the new.
Gotcha. Cool.
Yeah. So Bran comes out of his vision, and he simply says to Mira, like, they found us. And Mira starts, you know, crying and saying, I'm sorry, because she basically felt she failed. But then a man appears on horseback with a really cool mace and chain, which catches on fire. And he basically swats them all away and kills the few whites that are chasing them. He pulls Mira and Bran upon his horse, and they ride away to safety.
It was a bit of the Terminator, come with me if you want to live.
Come with me to live, yeah.
He dies, he dies.
This is, if you notice, though, there is a neat little thing in this. This is a combination of kind of two characters. Well, it's one character, but they've kind of, we'll get into it later in the show. But if you notice, his hands are completely black. And when he puts his hand out to Mira to, like, get on the horse, she kind of jerks back for half a second.
Mm-hmm.
And like, oh, my God, because his hands are just completely frostbitten.
Mm-hmm.
And that was an interesting little book tidbit.
But she's thinking, oh, do I get this guy with the gross hands, or do I get chewed up? I'll go with the gross hands.
Yeah, exactly. The next scene we see is Gilly and Sam traveling to Horn Hill, and Gilly is looking out the window. is looking in astonishment of how green everything is. And she also notices that Sam isn't saying much, and then he does say a lot, and she realizes he's nervous about returning home. And Sam has a nice little bit there. You know, he's like, well, I never thought I'd come back here after my father made me renounce my title and my inheritance, or he would kill me. It's like, good old dad. You know,
I'm thinking, how bad could this guy be?
Well, we yeah. And then they kind of review before they arrive. You know, he goes over with Gilly what she should tell his family, that it's Sam's baby. You know, they've been together, because he's worried that they'll reject little Sam. They're going to go with the lie that it is his baby. And he's not supposed to Gilly's not supposed to say that she's a wildling.
Right when they said they that, arrive, I go, what can I say? Something? Right when she said that, they said that, I go, oh, she'll reveal it.
Absolutely. What's the fun in that? They arrive, and Sam's mother and sister are really happy to see him. I was glad, at least with that scene, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then they embrace Gilly and the baby, and Sam's sister was very polite in saying, Gilly, you might need a bath.
And, you stink, but...
yeah.
But nice to meet you.
And, yeah. And I'll let you borrow a dress. And
what's your favorite? What's your color? Gray.
Yeah, silver. Silver, gold. Yeah, But you can definitely tell like a big difference between people who, you know, because they're educated, they've had money, and Gilly's just standing there in just amazement of all of this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's quite the spread.
It was impressive, I will say, as they're pulling up, I'm like, dang, that's a nice
I didn't realize there. Sam had, I knew Sam was had some came from some money, but I didn't realize that kind of money. I was like, Sam, you should have held out.
Yeah, I think I was a bit surprised too with the scale of how big the house was, because I mean the Tarleys are a very important family in the REIT, which is under the Tyrells, but I didn't realize they were that important, that they had that huge mansion.
That wasn't me. That?
What? Oh, that was my blinds. If that freaked you out, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't me.
Okay.
But again, you guys are going to hear more than they'll hear on the podcast, so don't get freaked out. It's okay.
Oh.
All right.
Okay. All right. The next scene, you have King Tommen. Tommen, not Tomlin. He's in the Sept talking with the High Sparrow, and he's inquiring, is there no other way? The High Sparrow's like, are you afraid? And he's like, of course. It just seems dangerous. And they're alluding to Margaery's Walk of Atonement, which she has to do.
Shame!
Shame.
That's where he's going to go. It's like,
he says, don't worry. Them.
I hear she's changed her agreement to where she doesn't have to appear nude on the show. So I think she can't do this, right, High Sparrow?
Oh, did she change that?
I think so. I think she's...
Because almost everyone with home was like going, yeah, okay, shame. Yeah, shame, shame. But I saw the opening credits that didn't say nudity. So I said, oh, she ain't going to do the shame walk.
Was that a spoiler?
I didn't know
for you,
that.
Yeah, I was spoiled.
I didn't know that that actress had said she wasn't going to do nudity. I thought it was just.
I think she has a similar thing.
Amelia.
That she's not going to do it anymore. Could be wrong.
I've said I won't do it on this podcast anymore.
Well, that's better for all of us.
Well, she only had one nude scene that I remember.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't see naked women. I'm married, so I don't recall.
Not even your wife, huh? Yeah.
You're hoping for anything, right?
Yeah. That's all women are to me, okay? Like, women are more to me than just naked objects, so just...
You're not saving yourself on this one.
We're getting in a married man podcast territory.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sorry. Back on track. Stay on target. Stay on target.
Yeah. Okay. So the High Sparrow says the Faith Militant will protect her. And kind of in a way, it's like saying, like, we love to split skulls, but not quite saying that. We love to keep people in check.
We love to split skulls, but we have to have a reason.
Yes.
I don't like you.
But then it,
boom.
Shame. Boom. Yeah. But he kind of comes back from that and says, anyway, I imagine the people will be very kind to her because she's opened her heart now to the gods. And then he kind of looks at Tommen and says, would you like to see her? To which Tommen's really happy. And he's like, yay! So he gets to see his wife after all this time. As Tommen enters, Margaery jumps up and gives him a big embrace. And her face, usually there's a telltale sign to me if they're faking it or not faking it. And
yeah.
This one was just kind of blanket. Hard. It was very hard. She's doing a good job of not giving away what her character is going to do, for sure.
Right.
And is that okay? So, because I did want to talk about it, because I was like, okay, is this a show, or is she like really drinking the Kool-Aid here? And if she's not showing us that there's more kind of going on in the back of her head, there's a bigger play here. Does that mean she's drunk in the Kool-Aid and she's, you know, in it to win it with the
High Sparrow
and crew.
I think she's faking, because I think the only way she can get her brother out safely is she has to make them think that she's drank the Kool-Aid. Because her brother's,
I think,
even if they attacked, how are they going to get the brother out safely?
Right. And I think this is probably one of the biggest power plays of any character, especially by Margaery. Because you've seen it where she visited Loras a couple episodes back, and she says, you can't let them win. You know, you have to be strong. You have to beat them at their own game or whatever. And you see her now just kind of submitting. And that's her two goals. What are her two goals? Get back to her family, as she said. And then right. She also – and who were her biggest obstacles to that, which are Jaime and Cersei.
Right.
So it kind of in – this is what she's doing, I think, in a way. And you see it later on the episode, the removal of Jaime kind of from power. So now all that's left will be Cersei. And so now they have, not only do they have the faith behind them, and she has Tommen on her side, but she also have the people on her side. So it's Margaery has just made a huge power play. I think she's faking it 100%.
Yeah.
We agree.
Okay. Well, there you go.
Okay. Yeah. But, you know, but what her conversation with Tommen is, though, is that, you know, he's kind of saying, you know, you're a good person. She's like, yeah, but I was faking it the whole time. I just wanted people to see how good I was. You know, and this is part of that whole charade of, because you wonder, like, she realizes that Tommen is so gullible that she has to play with this. And like I said, I'm really interested in seeing where it goes, to tell you the truth. But you're right. You know, he asked, what about Loras? And she says, you know, he needs to atone for his sins. So his time will just have to wait. And it makes me more curious, too, as in what the High Sparrow said to Tommen, and that what he told Cersei. Because we still don't know what was said.
Right.
Was this all some master plan between Margaery and the High Sparrow? Or, you know, like I said, it's going to be an interesting to see how it plays out.
For sure. Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. back at Horn Hill, we see Gilly as cleaned up really nice.
Yeah. She looks great.
I didn't recognize her.
Yeah.
I mean, I recognize her, but
I didn't recognize her. I was like, who's that? Is that another sister? I go, oh, wait, that's Gilly.
Yeah. And then we have the most loveliest dinner party ever.
Yeah, I wish I was there. Yeah.
I feel like everybody's had like an awkward family dinner of some sort like that, and sometime, you know, like you're meeting the in-laws for the first time or something along those lines. Just
and someone threatens to kill you. I mean, it happens all the time. It just
all the time.
In some families, maybe.
Yeah. See that sword? You'll never see it.
That was a good cop for the circus, weren't we talking about that sword maybe a couple weeks ago?
No, we've never talked about that sword.
Oh, okay.
We talked about the one from that belonged down in Dorne. And I don't know why I'm going blank on the name. But like that family, so it's a different part of the country.
Okay. I thought it was the same sword. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that was the Sword of the Morning, whereas in this one is Heartsbane.
Sword of the Evening.
Hearts. But we've heard about Heartsbane before, haven't we? I feel like we've talked about Heartsbane before. Because when they say it's like, oh, Heartsbane, I know that one.
Yeah, it sounds familiar, but I think it's kind of similar to what Joffrey named that other sword that was broken up from Ned Stark's two swords. His one sword was broken up into two. I think one of the ones he named was similar to it.
Oh, okay.
Uh, Seer. But yeah, like you see at the beginning, like Sam's right from the get go, his dad's giving him a dirty look, and Gilly looks confused on how to use silverware. And the topic turns to hunting because he's inquiring about the deer they're eating, you know, because it tastes good. And then the brother's like, oh, no, this one's over a week old. So they couldn't even give him the fresh meat. It was just kind of like, oh, we'll give you the leftovers.
Yeah.
And then it turns to how Sam has hunted now up in the north and how Gilly's even a good hunter. And the family, the girls anyway, try to keep it light by saying, like, oh, I'm so jealous that you know how to hunt. You know, Dad would never teach me how to do that. And the dad kind of quickly snaps at her and shut her up.
Just call him Chuckles.
Chuckles?
Yeah, Chuckle. We'll call the dad Chuckles. He's a life Chuckle. Of the park.
And then more food starts to come out, and Sam's father finally fires his first volley, saying, oh, you're not fat enough already.
Oh, the bread. Because the bomb was bread. Like, hey, yeah, go ahead and have some bread, Sam.
Jerk. Yeah. Big jerk.
Why does Sam keep wearing that jacket? Can I ask him, though? Why does Sam keep wearing the jacket?
Because he's uncomfortable. It makes him comfortable.
He's no longer in snow. I mean, it's not in ice. He's, you know, it seems kind of warm there. And he's still walking around with that big old jacket on.
I think he's just trying to be comfortable, you know, probably a little bit self-conscious, so.
Well, maybe, but it's like, take off the jacket, Sam. The jacket probably stinks.
I know. But I think
I'm going to defend the dad here. Maybe he wasn't so cranky because Sam was there. Maybe he's wearing that smelly jacket, and you're trying to eat. And you got that stench coming off the jacket. It would make me irritable, too.
Well, they were sitting pretty far enough that maybe the smell wouldn't murder. But I think it's just a visual cue to show that he's uncomfortable. He's probably wearing these clothes because, you know, it's the same clothes he's been wearing. I think just to kind of show an air of uncomfortability around his father. That's my thought. Nick, I don't know if you have any thoughts about it.
Get a new jacket, Sam.
Well, I mean, I think also because he is a member of the Night's Watch, this is probably the only clothes they have because they're poor. And I don't think he's got like a cotton t-shirt underneath that thing. It's just that's all he gets to wear.
True.
But it's hot. But it's got to be hot in there. It's got to be warm.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Also, I mean, he's just had a long sea voyage, so he got the salt air. He was puking up most of it, so he probably got a hint of that in there.
Yeah.
And then sweating for months at a time. Yeah, he probably smells a little ripe.
I'm telling you, so the dad maybe had some justification for being such a jerk.
Oh, brother. All right.
Take the bread and wash yourself off. Clean yourself off.
Let's move on here.
Okay. But, you know, Sam, though, he does dismiss his dad a little bit, even though it did hurt his feelings, and he tries to justify his presence for being there by saying, you know, you got the letter. I'm going to be trained as a maester because that's supposed to be, you know, that's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But don't worry, you know, Dad, like once I get my chain, I'll return back to the north. You won't have to put up with me anymore. And his dad, of course, dismisses it. It's like, I thought the Night's Watch would make a man of you, but yet you stayed fat and soft, I see. I bet you can't even sit a horse or even wield a sword yet. And, you know, Sam just sits there and takes it. So Gilly defends him, saying, you know, he can wield a sword. You know, he killed a Finn and a White Walker. And of course, his brother then just laughs at him, saying like, "There's no such thing as that," you know. And it's just, like nothing they do can gain respect, seemingly. And it's just kind of sad. And they don't believe Gilly, and then she slips up by saying he did this while going south towards the wall. So
bringing her up from the
down, and so she. Yeah, so she admits that she was north of the wall, to which Sam's dad gets furious with because he finds out that she's a wildling. And
but she was one of what's Craster's, you know, harem.
Craster's keep, yeah.
So right. Is that because he's not a wildling or?
Well, anyone lives north of the wall is considered a wildling. But I totally agree with you because he lived in civilization north of the wall. You know, he had his own home, he had his own pigs and. Agricultural kind of way of life, whereas in the true wildlings, you know, just hunt and live off the land.
Yeah.
So there is a difference, but to the south, it doesn't matter.
Gotcha.
And then his dad, I guess, feeling a little bit threatened, he points out the Valyrian steel sword, Heartsbane, you know, and said, this is our family sword, you know, And I know my son would be weak, and if he became Lord Tarly, then this would be the end of our line. And that's when he thinks that Gilly and the Bait. Yeah, 500 years we've had this sword. I mean, and he's right. Valyrian steel swords are really, really rare because they came from the time of Aegon the Conqueror, because it's all that Valyrian. And like I said, like Ice, which was the name of Ned Stark's sword, was one. There's one down in Dorne, the one here. There's only like about 6 or 7 in the whole kingdom anyway. But this could play an important part because we all know that this is the only steel that will kill a White Walker because it is from volcanic fire. So his dad, Lord Tarly, is thinking that Sam has done all this just to get back at him, to spite him. And, you know, because I already thought that this girl was a whore, but now I see she's not even a southern whore. She's a wild whore. I'm like, oh, thanks, Dad.
You're so nice.
Yeah, and you've brought a bastard to my home just as an excuse to get invitation back into our home. And that's what I mean. Like, that's how much disdain he had for Sam. It's just like his dad is so narrow-minded. He thinks he's doing all this just to try to get back his inheritance or to try to get some kind of respect back. And his father just hates him.
Yeah.
So Sam's mother and his sister and Gilly all get up out of anger and leave the room. And then Lord Tarly basically says, you know, I'll raise your bastard, but this is the last night that you're going to spend in Horn Hill ever. So, father of the year?
Yeah. It's about the same way Jack raised me, so it doesn't seem that out of character.
Exactly like that. Well, did Jace, but to be fair, Jay smelled.
Oh, brother.
Who's worse? And, Nick, you watch Shameless. Who's worse, Frank Gallagher or this guy?
I think this guy. I don't know. Frank, it's a different, because Frank actually does care for his kids in Shameless, but he's just a horrible person because he's usually out for himself.
Right.
Because, you know, like, did you watch this season yet?
Yeah. Let's not derail too much into this for the people who are listening that don't watch Shameless. But,
well, watch him.
There you go. Yeah.
If you get Showtime, watch Shameless. It's good.
There you go.
But No, I think this guy is worse just because he, you know, if you're not to his specifications of what he thinks a man is, or just some brute who wants to go hunt and gain money, which that's not what Sam does. Sam uses his brain. That, you know, he just dismisses him altogether, like he has no value. But, you know, the show is clearly shown that Sam is of value.
Or look at Tyrion.
Loves you. Exactly. You know, a book reader is just as actually Tyrion says, you know, someone who has knowledge is worth way more than someone who can wield a sword.
Right.
So Sam later on goes up to Gilly's room and apologizes for not defending her, but he was so afraid that his dad wouldn't raise little Sam if he stood up for himself. But he says his goodbyes to Gilly and to little Sam and walks out of the room. And you think that's kind of it. But a few minutes later, Sam comes back in and says, we're leaving together because we belong together. And the last little poke at his dad, I guess, he decides to take Heartsbane, the family sword, and then they leave.
I'm like, good for you, man. He's going to need it. They're going to need all the Valyrian swords they can get.
Exactly.
Right. But it makes me – this scene really makes me curious now where they're going to go, because if they go to Old Town now to go join the Citadel, women aren't allowed there, as Sam's already said. So how can he go train to be a maester with Gilly there? Because this is – go ahead.
Do you think Sam – his dad comes after Sam for the sword back?
He could.
It's very possible. This sword means a lot to him.
Yeah,
because it is. It's extremely valuable. And then, but what's to prevent Sam just saying heck with it all and leaving and abandoning his vows to the Night's Watch and then starting a whole life with Gilly? Or anything could happen.
Yeah.
Right.
Could go any way. You never know.
Yeah. But I think I would still bet he tries to do, because he wants to honor John because he thinks John's still, well, he's alive, but, you know, he's still right. the Knight's Lord Commander.
Yeah.
So he wants to do right by John. The next scene, we're back in Braavos with Arya, and she's watching the play once again, depicting the events in the Seven Kingdoms. But this time we're given a new event. We're seeing the Purple Wedding where Joffrey dies. And
spoiler.
Yeah. And Arya watches the actress who plays Sansa in the play. She's watching in envy as Lady Crane is doing her performance as Joffrey is dying. And she's putting two and two together of who is actually trying to kill Lady Crane. And it's funny. I enjoyed it because you see Arya just laughing at Joffrey's death because how much she hated him. It's like she's getting enjoyment when everyone else is just stern-faced. You know, like, oh, so sympathy. And she's over just smiling like a possum.
Was this because, you know, Joffrey was a big one on her list? Was this like a little bit of her getting to relish Joffrey's death? And do you think this counts for her crossing him off the list now she's kind of gotten to witness a play recreating it?
Right. I think it's the enjoyment because she might not even had known that Joffrey died. So seeing not only learning that he died, but actually seeing how he died is probably a little, you know, sweet feeling to her, as in like, yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, the book, to me, the book version of Arya is a little bit more bitter or out to get you.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have the remorse that this show character Arya has. She's more of like, I'm going to get what I want, which makes her a favorite because she's just a really strong woman. But Arya then leaves the play a little early and sneaks backstage to where she puts the poison in Lady Crane's rum. And then the cast begins to come in, and Lady Crane notices Arya and inquires, like, why are you back here? Because you really don't belong here. And Arya a little bit, kind of, she does tell her, but she diverts it away by saying, oh, you're a good actress, and but that final scene should be changed. And then Lady Crane then, she basically tells her, you know, Cersei would be more angry because she loved her son, and not being able to say goodbye to him would just make her infuriated. And Lady Crane really appreciates this and gives Arya a compliment, saying, you know, you have a good face for expressions, and then basically gives her a job, or at least offers her a job. It's like, do you want to join the acting crew? And then Arya gets a little nervous and just flees the room because you can see it, like, she kind of has respect for Lady Crane, that she actually is a good person. The rest of the cast then are seen sitting around, and Lady Crane starts to say this, like, I would like to change this scene, the one that Arya just suggested, and they all kind of shut her down. So it shows that not only is that one girl that's playing Sansa jealous, but the rest of them are jealous of her as well.
Right.
Saying, like, you know, what do you know? I've only been doing this my whole life, you know, and your opinions aren't worth even speaking. And she begins to drink the rum that's poisoned, and Arya comes back in and smacks it out of her hand. And they all look at her in astonishment. And you don't know, like, were all of them in on it, or was it just the one? But Arya says, you know, be careful with this one, pointing at the girl who plays Sansa, said, this one's trying to kill you. And then we see that where the waif has been watching the whole time, rooting for her to fail.
So it was a cool scene in how they set it up, because it was almost just like a, she's going to drink and she's going to die. That's what we all expect. And then, but is she going to do anything? But it seemed like she went all the way through with it. And then all of a sudden she comes back and knocks it out. And on what side, do you think there's a bit of a cheering that goes on here that she kind of went the noble way? Or is it also, the Starks are almost noble to a fault. So is this going to be a bad thing for Arya Stark?
Oh, I think it's clearly shown in the next few seconds after the scene that it's a bad thing for Arya, and it's different. I don't know where they're going to take it.
I thought it was pretty predictable. I figured that's what she was going to do.
But I guess mm-hmm. the concern is yes, it's bad, but it's going to be like really bad, or is she going to eventually rise to the occasion and beat the waif? But from all intents and purposes, we've seen the waif like badassery style, you know, destroy Arya. blind or unblind. And I hope this isn't the end of Arya for something like this.
Arya has the eye of the tiger. She's fine now.
Well, you wonder, like, is it because she wasn't shown how to wear faces, so she won't have that skill. But now she has Needleback, and the Waif doesn't know that. So right. Will Arya get the surprise
yeah.
and kill her? But the thing is that she's still a marked person. Maybe Jack and Hagar will let her go if she kills the Waif, but she's still not one of them, and she knows some of their skills. So yeah. I think Arya will be a marked person for the rest of her life.
Yes, yeah, especially because you won't know who's coming after you.
Right, because you don't.
Yeah.
Unless Arya learns how to change her face as well.
Yeah.
But then, yeah, so the Waif, Jack and Hagar, after the Waif reports to Jaqen that Arya has failed, Jaqen H'ghar says, okay, fine, you can kill her, but make it painless. And then Arya reclaims Needle and goes to sleep.
But now, don't you think that because when he says make it painless, that maybe if Arya can defeat her, that maybe he gives her a little, okay, because I think he has a soft spot for her.
Well, I think so, because if it wasn't for the Waif, I don't think he would have cared, or he would have just, I don't know. Like, it seemed like he was kind of indifferent.
Yeah.
I mean, this could potentially be another test that she's still in the order. I mean, you don't know. This could, Jaqen really could really respect her, as you say, make it painless. So what Arya does kill her, was this just meant to be? Will Jaqen be there witnessing this fight and say the Waif lost sight of we are no one, you know, you're not supposed to have vengeance, right. We're supposed to be servants. And he could even say, you know, Arya made the right choice by, you know, because they are assassins, but they're not assassins. To kill this woman who was potentially good, I kind of think Arya did make the right decision.
Well, you can see when she walks out after she says, he says, make it painless. She gives a smirk, like, yeah, whatever. She's going to suffer, and it's going to be a long, long suffer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we move to the next scene in King's Landing, and Jaime and Lord Tyrell are leading the Tyrell troops to the Sept to stop Margaery's Walk of Atonement. As they approach, the High Sparrow is proclaiming all of Margaery's sins, and the crowd is actually fairly quiet, but then Jaime rides up on the horse and says that he's acting under King Tommen's orders to release. Yeah, exactly. That's what's clever about it. That you must release Margaery and Loras Tyrell, or there'll be bloodshed. The High Sparrow, though, is pretty stubborn about it. He says they don't recognize the king's authority in this matter. However, there's not going to be a walk of atonement because Queen Margaery has already atoned by bringing King Tommen now into the light of the Seven. And what I liked about this was they don't really zoom in to Margaery. They are pretty much keep on the High Sparrow, but you can still see her facial expressions. Whereas when she didn't show any when she hugged Tommen, you see it like the a thing of surprise and pride that her family's there to save her. And you kind of wonder, like, is this happy because her family's there to save her, or is it happy because her plan has gone exactly as she planned it? That she knew that by doing this, and that she knows that Tommen is right behind her, that she's got the Lannisters right where she wants them. That he's made a mistake by so boldly putting the Lannister family between the faith and the king.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's giving her a lot of credit for a lot of the Machiavellian moves here. I'm not saying she's not capable of it, but it's definitely what's Lord Tyrell's? What's his name? I'm forgetting
Mace.
His name. He's such a idiot. But
he's a dope.
He's such a dope. But basically, he's like, "What's going on?" He's like, "We lost you, dummy."
What just I know it's great. Yeah, the queen.
Why ended up backing down? Because you are the cowardly lion.
He's not even the cowardly lion. He's just the stupidly lion.
No, he looks like he's got to be real.
He does look like the, yeah.
Put him up. But is the High Sparrow one step ahead of Marjorie? Because he's not he's not a stupid guy. So is he one step ahead of Marjorie on this whole twist and turn?
Mm-hmm. Well, he might be in this situation, but once they are allowed to leave, who's to say some other kind of event or death might happen that will totally derail what he had planned? I mean, this is Game of Thrones. You never know. Tommen might be his ace up his sleeve, and then Tommen could easily die, and then it's all gone.
Yeah, okay.
But, you know, you see that, though, like, that was, to me, it was a very subtle, but it was one of those moments where I'm just probably overthinking it, but exactly, she's got the smirk that it worked, and then when the crowd applauds that the High Sparrow says this is a brand new alliance, an age of harmony between the crown and the faith, that, you know, Marjorie knows in that moment she's won, maybe, because the people are behind Tommen and her as king and queen.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, that...
Yeah, if anything, Marjorie, no matter what she does, she has to neutralize the power of Cersei and, by extension, the Lannisters.
Right.
If she's going to truly rule, yeah.
Right. And you see that in the next scene. And in the Red Keep, King Tommen dismisses Jaime from the Kingsguard for attacking the Faith, because you're clearly trying to divide the powers that be. And then Jaime's trying to... He can't really be his father, but, you know, he kind of wants to be, like, you don't have to do this, you know. But he said, you know, and the thing, he's looking over at his uncle Kevin, which is Tywin's brother, who's the Hand of the King now, and he kind of wonder if this is a little bit as well, that Kevin Lannister wants this too, because you've already seen where he's butted heads with Cersei and Jaime.
Nope.
So you see with Kevin Lannister in previous episodes, he's already butting heads with Jaime and Cersei. So this, he might even be in with Tommen trying to advise, like, let's get rid of these because they're causing trouble. And so you see Tommen look back from Kevin back to Jaime and say, no, my decision is final on this. You will continue to serve, but not in this city. And that's the end of that scene.
Actually, we lost Jack from the internet, so we might get him back, we might not get him back, so if there isn't any jokey, witty repartee from that end of the world, you know why. But, yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of, I can kind of see it, because Jaime overplayed his hand a little bit here, well, the one hand he has, and it kind of backfired, so... At least he's not going to be, you know, thrown in a dungeon, as Cersei said a little bit later.
Right. But yeah, because you see that, whereas in, like, Jaime and Cersei's, their move almost every time is power. That's the only thing they really understand, is that, you know, violence wins, power wins. And they've never really learned to play the Game of Thrones, as in that's kind of what Marjorie, the Queen of Thorns, that's what other people have done, is just like, no, in Littlefinger, it's more about positioning. And violence doesn't always win. And this time, Jaime paid the price for it, for thinking, oh, I'll just go up there and kill. And we'll be back in power and things will be hunky-dory. And it wasn't.
Yeah. It's like, I killed the Mad King. That worked.
Yeah. But, okay. So the next scene we have is, it's really a setup scene. It's really just to establish a storyline that the audience has kind of forgotten about. And we see Lord Walter Frey scolding his sons for losing River Run to the Blackfish Tully. And he demands that they take it back, because now Lord Frey is the lord of the Riverlands, no longer are the Tullys in power. You know, he reaffirms this, saying, you know, for 300 years we've kissed the Tully's fish, you know, and, you know, basically saying, you failed me, everyone's laughing at us. And the sons object to all this scrutiny, saying, you know, the commoners now, it's not just that, it's that the commoners are turning against us, the Brothers Without Banners are riling up all these people in the Riverlands to overthrow our power because they want the Tullys back. And that basically the Blackfish will never yield River Run now that he's had it. It's his castle, it's his parents' castle, and they know it way better than we ever will.
My quick question here, just to refresh, because you know I'm not as intensive. But did the Tullys lose their power after the Red Wedding? Is that what that whole move was, or one of the many things that happened because of that?
Right, that was one of the reasons why the phrase betrayed at the Red Wedding, because it was one of those Lannister deals, the same as with Roose Bolton, is that if the Tullys did this, if the phrase betrayed the Starks and the Tullys, that he would now be the Lord of the Riverlands as Roose Bolton became the Lord of the North.
Gotcha. Cool.
And then, you know, basically his sons are saying that the Blackfish is never going to yield his castle. And he says, oh, yes, he'll yield because they've forgotten that we have Lord Edmund Tully, which is Catelyn's brother, who was the one who actually got married at the Red Wedding. And he brings him in chains. But it's a different actor now.
Is it different? He looked similar.
He looks similar, but I think it was a different guy because, you know, the guy that plays him was, you know, he's now on Outlander. He's been in a lot of stuff here lately. He's a really famous British actor now. So I'm not sure if he would be want to come back for just this little minor role.
Huh. Did we I'll IMDb while you're talking. Looked a lot like him. So he just got a really good lookalike. I thought it was him just with, you know, more scraggly, a little more prisoner kind of garb looking thing, but...
Right, it could have been him, but to me, it just because he has that really distinctive pointy nose with a little lump in it. So I was like, oh, that it didn't really look like him.
but it was good to get a refresher because really, I kind of blacked out the Red Wedding a lot of ways. It was so disturbing in my mind. So it was good to kind of get us back in context of. A bit of the aftermath there from the other week, because we knew what happened to Bolton, so it was good to kind of get back in context of what's going on from that side or the aftermath of it.
Absolutely. And, you know, as we said like last week, this is really a way to, because, you know, books 4 and 5 are split up geographically, and it's just kind of a way of getting back to that part in the book that they've skipped over in this show. So I understand why they had to show this and get people kind of reacquainted with the Riverlands and what's going on there.
Yeah.
The next scene is back in King's Landing again. And it's Jaime talking to Cersei, and he is basically he's now telling what Tommen and Kevin Lannister have ordered him to do, which is to assist the Freys now in the retaking of Riverrun, because the Freys apparently. Are too weak to handle their own business in their own lands. I mean, he's really mad that he has to do it because he doesn't want to leave. And he's even more mad because, as with the phrase
Just pause real quick. Was it Tobias Menzies is the actor? Yeah, that's him. Same guy.
Okay, well, good. Okay.
There you go.
They just did a good makeup job then because he didn't look the same.
Yeah, but you're right. He is also an Outlander. Outlander!
Yeah.
But there you go.
And, you know, He was in that series recently while me and Jack were talking about the Night Manager. He had a bit role in that. I mean, like I said, he's really an actor. I'm seeing a lot more and a lot more things. So good for him. But, you know, Jaime reaffirms the same expression that the Freys had to their dad, was that, you know, this siege could last for months because the Blackfish knows his castle. The castle's surrounded by water. It's just one of those things that it's not going to be a quick battle. So he doesn't want to go. So Cersei inquires, what are you going to do? And he says, I'm going to give Bronn the biggest bag of gold anyone's ever seen, and we're going to go into the Sept and kill the High Sparrow and all of his little minions. And so you can see Jamie's still really bent on getting revenge. That's just their way of power and killing, because he believes that the faith is tearing their family apart by pitting, because he's been alienated. And then Cersei actually shows reason for a change and says, but if you kill the High Sparrow in there, you'll never leave that Sept alive. You need to go and conquer Riverrun because you need to show to the people what the Lannisters are, you know, that we are power, that these are our lands, and that by taking that castle, you'll do that. Jaime then kind of objects again. He goes, but I need to be here for you talking about her trial amongst the seven, which is going to come up. He says, no, I'll have a trial by combat. I won't need you because I have the mountain.
That's a good point. Hey, if you got the mountain, what do you got to worry about?
That's true.
Except now that she said it, it's not going to work out that way, I'm guessing.
Probably not. I have a pretty good theory on what's going to happen, but that we'll just have to wait and see on that one.
There you go.
And then the next scene, we go back to Bran and Mira, and the man in black, who's the rescuer, is draining a rabbit for its blood, which is really disturbing.
Yes.
And I was like, what's he going to do with that? But he says the three-eyed raven sent him when they inquire like why he's here. And Mira says, but he's dead. And he says, now he lives again. And I'm not sure if he's implying, I mean, you kind of want to take it at face value. He's implying that Bran is the new three-eyed raven.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a really popular theory out there that Bran has been the three-eyed raven this whole time.
Yes.
I don't see how that works.
We did bring it up, I think, last week a little bit. Like, is it time traveling kind of thing? He's there the whole time. It wasn't so. But mm-hmm. last week you said you don't see how that can work. You're still with that?
I'm still with that. Like, I think that, I mean, the show can be completely different than the books, but I just don't see that happening. I think it's a totally different person, and that just. It's kind of like King, like, you know, now he's the Red Raven, but he's not. I mean, maybe they're a different person, but maybe time is irrelevant. You know, it's just, it's all bleeds into the next thing. So, mm-hmm. and they can, that one person who's in charge can influence these events, but now that he's the Red Raven, he can influence those same events again.
Yeah.
So it doesn't, that would make more sense to me than actually going back and becoming that person.
Mm-hmm.
So it's showing that, you know, that Bran has summoned him from a different time. Maybe even in the future, when Bran is a little bit older, he has gone back and saved his Uncle Benjen. Spoiler alert. But, you know, and then told him, you have to come help me. Showing how powerful the Stark kind of bloodlines are, that he would rather have his family protect him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Bran then inquires as to who he is. He reveals himself to be his Uncle Benjen. And
I was so pumped about this because we haven't seen him since season one,
right.
And I just assumed him dead, but I thought it seemed like he would come up some way in the future, so I kind of liked how he came in here.
Yeah, a lot of people were really happy to see him because it was one of the biggest mysteries in the books as well, is that, you know, what happened to Benjen, because he was this really cool character that, you know, that Jon Snow looked up to, and then he just disappears. And you're like, well, what happened? Like, we want to know.
Yeah.
The Children of the Forest. Benjen claims that the Children of the Forest brought him back to life, and you know how. And he's like, oh, you had a shard of dragon glass put in your chest. He's like, yes, exactly. And he says, now you're the three-eyed raven. And then, like I said earlier, Bran is like, well, I didn't learn anything. I can't control it. And he kind of gives him, Benjen gives him confidence. He's like, you know, but before the Night's King comes, you will. You will know everything, and you'll be there waiting. It gives you hope that maybe Benjen is privy to some things, and he can continue to educate Bran a little bit, because he does have some of this magic in him from the Children of the Forest.
Well, yeah, it seems like he was like halfway to becoming White Walker or whatever, or wait, and he was kind of staved off in some form or fashion. But it's nice that he's brought in, because Bran still needs somebody. Bran still needs a mentor of some sort, because his training was kind of interrupted. So I agree. It's awesome that, and especially it's Benjen is cool. It's not some random person. It's Benjen, which is a cool cool twist or cool.
It's Benjen.
Plot development.
And it, yeah, exactly. He can possibly be a mentor, whereas in Hodor, really wasn't, he was great, but he wasn't the same. And now it seems like it could be a good progression in the story.
Yeah, definitely. And I guess we'll save the character melding here for what happens to the book stays in the books.
Exactly. That's the first thing I've got written down. And it's not really a big thing. It's just, it's a little tidbit.
All right. Well, well, that's a little tease there to hang around for what happens if the book stays in the books.
And then we have the last scene of the show, which to me was a bit redundant. And
same here. I felt it was redundant.
I guess it's just, it's a lot of, okay, let's give Danny something to do.
Yeah.
Because we see Danny leading her Dothraki army, and she's talking with Dario, and she's like, oh, how long is it to Meereen? And he's like, oh, about a week. And so we know that they're, at least now we know we're going, they're heading to Meereen, because they really hadn't said where they were going yet. And then she's inquiring about how many ships will it take for my armies to go to Westeros, and he just kind of says, oh, about 1,000. And it just seemed a little bit kind of lazy. Like, okay, yeah, we're just going to dump some information on you. And like, okay. And then a gust of wind appears in the ford, and so Danny rides on, and then you see Drogon appear with her on his back. He flies, she lands, and then she gives a really cool rallying speech. But even the rally speech was basically the same speech Drogo gave in like episode 6 of season 1 inside the tent before he kills her brother. And I was like, oh, they just basically just rewrote the same speech.
Yeah.
And I just kind of was like, okay, so what are we getting from this? And we didn't really get much. Yeah. I mean, it was a cool scene because you see this really cool CGI dragon and all of her soldiers are pumped up.
Yeah.
But I kept thinking in my mind, because like, okay, now we've got another week of marching. So it's like, it's one of those moments where you want to see the second after she stops speaking.
Yeah.
And the soldiers just kind of like lay down their arms, go, okay, let's keep walking. Yeah, it's like, that's it. But that's the end of the episode. And I mean, it was a good episode, but it's basically a build episode. It's kind of like we had the first 5 episodes, which is his own story arc, and now we're beginning a new story arc for the final 5 episodes.
Yeah, I agree. It was definitely a more build. I thought the last scene was redundant because we already kind of had that big, epic Khaleesi moment where she kills all the other calls and then steps out in the flames. It was this awesome moment, very pinnacle of kind of what that was. And this was kind of the same thing, but this time she had a dragon. Now, there is some theories going around that is this kind of showing her possibly becoming the bad guy, or at least taking on some of the tendencies of her father, the Mad King. What's your thoughts about that? At least that adds more relevancy to the scene, in that, you know, she's a conqueror, she isn't a ruler. What are your thoughts there? Or do you think it's just trying to kind of make something out of this kind of redundancy?
I don't think it has anything to do with the Mad King. She is, you know, she is a Targaryen, and Targaryens are conquerors, the same as what Daria said. They're not really leaders, because even the history of Westeros have shown that once they conquered, they really weren't that good of rulers. They kind of just led with an iron fist, and if you got in their way, they killed you.
Mm-hmm.
And this, to me, just seems just another scene that's just to kind of show Dany's doing something or she's going somewhere. But, I mean, yeah, that would be really interesting if she did show elements of madness later, because that's the saying in the books is, you know, when a Targaryen is born, they flip a coin to see if they'll be sane or mad. But so far she's shown that she's pretty sane. She just feels entitled for no reason. That's the one flaw to me with Dany, is that she doesn't really have experience in ruling. She's just a good conqueror. She's good at getting people to follow her. And I think that's where Tyrion will come into play, is that he will be a good advisor or hand to her. If it all works out.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, again, a good episode, a lot of good stuff in it. Loved the return of Benjen to it. Plus, it's just fun to say Benjen. Yeah. Now, we do have a couple emails here for listener feedback from the same person. One is book-focused, and one isn't, so I'll save the book-focus for when we start. What happens in the book stays in the book. But first is, what do you think about the theory that Bran is... actually, let's just save these all for... because maybe this is more book-related. So let's just save it all for what happens in the book stays in the book. So Let's go into that right now. It is the in time in the podcast where we have our book expert, Nick, talk about things that happen in the book in relation to the episode. Maybe what was different. Maybe what was there that we didn't see in the show. I mean, maybe giving some more context what happened in the show. Now, this does talk about things that are in the book. So if you haven't seen, or I'm sorry, seen, read the book, you can just stop listening now. But if you want to sit around for a treat, let's jump into what happens in the book stays in the book. And I'll kick it off here with the listener feedback, and then maybe I'll bring up some stuff that you were talking about. But this is from Nicole. What do you think about the theory that Bran is Azor Ahai instead of Jon or Dany? That his warging to the past will make the Mad King crazy, which sets forth everything in motion so that Bran goes north and is there to stop the Night's King.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts there?
Well, anything's possible, but like, I don't think he's that person, because as the Red priestesses have constantly said that they're reborn from fire, that god is, you know, supposed to have a flaming sword, and so I can't see Bran, because Bran's not really a warrior. He's it is interesting. I mean, it could happen, but like, I'm pretty sure that Jon Snow is that person. So we'll see. But
second part to this is, do you think they're setting up for Stoneheart?
I do. I really do.
Can we get some context there? Because I have no clue what that is. Maybe I'm an idiot.
I mean, this is a little bit spoiler. I mean, Lady Stoneheart is a very popular character, even though she's not much in the books yet.
Okay, I think I know this one. So this is kind of spoilery.
Yeah, because that's why the River Run story is important, and that's what that Nicole's getting at, is that they're returning to this River Run plot, and that's where you see Brienne heading back towards River Run along with Sansa, even though Sansa's not really technically going to River Run in the books. And you see Jaime going to Run, and you see even the mention of the Banner Brotherhood, I mean, the Brothers Without Banners, at the phrase, is that this is all that storyline. And basically, after the Red Wedding,
should we leave that one or no?
Well, I mean, we're in the book section, so
okay, cool.
People should know.
You've been warned, people. But go ahead.
Catelyn Stark is reanimated by a Red Priest, and she now becomes Lady Stoneheart, because she's no longer really Catelyn Stark, though, because she was left dead for so long that her throat was slit, so she can't speak, and she looks like a zombie because a lot of her blood left her body, but she is alive, and she's hell-bent on revenge. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Brothers Without Banners do. It makes sense, like, from where they're going on the show, is that Brienne will get to River Run, and her and Jaime will be of opposing forces, possibly, but if Lady Stoneheart happens to capture her before, there might be some friction with the vows that Brienne took for Catelyn and failed her, and what Lady Stoneheart might make her do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, to me, it makes perfect sense that they are going, at least with elements of that storyline. I mean, Lady Stoneheart might not even come into factor, but they're definitely getting to that River Run conflict in this season.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you, Nicole, for the feedback. All right, Nick. Now take it away proper for what happens in the book stays in the book.
Sure. Yeah. All right. So with Uncle Benjen, it's still not revealed in the books that he is alive. Mm-hmm. He's still a mystery that he is, you know, that was it, that he rode out on patrol and never came back. But a character has been introduced, and his name is Cold Hands, which is this character in the show. And that's what I was saying earlier with why his hands were black, is because they're all frostbit, and that's why he's called Cold Hands. You never learn his name, because he's basically a dead person.
Mm-hmm.
And he leads Bran to the Three-Eyed Raven, because he's been ordered to, not after.
Ah, okay.
So he's escorted all of them to the cave as protection, and he fights off all of the waits and the White Walkers off when they're attacking them on the way to the caves.
Okay.
And the controversial part of this is that George R. R. Martin has repeatedly said that Cold Hands is not Benjen Stark.
Hmm.
So, it could just be a lie to keep people from believing that,
mm-hmm.
but you kind of want to believe him because George doesn't really usually lie about things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so Benjen could still show up, and Cold Hands, he vanished after Bran gets to the caves, but that's pretty much the end of book five. So we don't know if Cold Hands or Benjen has a role to play in future books.
Mm. Or, you know, Benjen's just a similar type thing where he was kind of saved from death or whatever. And he has similar Cold Hands.
But it really was, I know this probably made a lot of fans happy because a lot of people really want Benjen back because it was a good mystery, and a lot of people believe that Cold Hands was Benjen, so it kind of was just one of those moments where the producers were like, you know, let's just make them happy and say okay, in our version of Game of Thrones, Benjen is Cold Hands.
Nice. Cool.
The next one is Sam and Gilly. In the book so far, they have not made it to Horn Hill yet, but I expect it to be similar.
Mm-hmm.
But the one difference is that Lord Tarly is not at Horn Hill, at least at this point in the books. He's in King's Landing, and he actually is in possession of Heartsbane because it is his sword. So the whole speech and being tense at the table has not happened yet, and Sam has not stolen the sword. I mean, it is a cool little bit there, but I can't see Sam really doing it in the books. But we'll see. And also, that the one little bit that was kind of strange was the whole tension with Sam and his dad about him becoming a man. Like, I sent you to the wall to become a man. Mm-hmm. No, Sam's dad hates him. It's just like, no, you're fat and you're not anything like me because you use your brain. I want you gone because I don't want you inheriting. That's why Sam was sent to the wall. It's mm-hmm. nothing to do with becoming a man. He didn't ever want him to see him again. He probably hoped Sam would go up there and die.
Yeah.
So that's the one true difference that it didn't make sense of like, oh, I thought you'd be a man. It's like, no, he didn't care. The next one was Marjorie is not free yet in the books,
mm-hmm.
nor is she demanded to make a walk of atonement yet, nor has Tommen joined the faith, because Tommen's just a little kid,
mm-hmm.
So he's not going to have these kind of wits about him. Margaery is still just a prisoner in the Sept, which that would look forward to seeing what happens with that.
Yeah, do you feel like it would follow a similar path, or could you see it going a different way in the books, based upon what's kind of led up to that point?
No, I think it will go fairly similar. Marjorie will do it more on her own, or she might have some help. Because, like I said, like Cersei and her still have this great duel going on, and Marjorie wants power. But Marjorie's a little kid as well. I think she's only like 14 or 16
mm-hmm.
in the books. So I can't see her being as witty, but yeah. There's definitely going to be a power play.
Nice.
And then the biggest one probably was that Jaime is not dismissed from the Kingsguard yet. I mean, I don't see why he would be,
mm-hmm.
but this is just a way, I guess, to merge these storylines once again so he can have an excuse to go up to River Run. Because
mm-hmm.
He's actually quite glad to leave King's Landing in the books, because at this point he's just – remember, he never went down to Dorne in the books like they mm-hmm. did last season. As soon as he gets back with only having one hand, he is kind of dismissed altogether by Cersei because she's not important to him because he's not the fighter he was.
Mm-hmm.
So when he gets back and he hears that there's still conflict in River Run, that's what he does. He jumps on it. He's like, oh, I'll go up there because I now learn how to fight again, and I'll prove myself once again to Cersei to be the warrior I could be. And he's tired of all these people because she's basically queen in King's Landing, and she has all these hangers on and people trying to influence her, and he has no influence over her, so he's like, I need to get the heck out of here.
Mm-hmm. And maybe gain some influence back, possibly.
Right, exactly. But things evolve differently, especially when it comes to the whole trial by combat, and it probably will evolve as well in the show, and we'll see how, you know, in the future episodes, how this will be similar or not similar.
Cool.
And then with Arya, I've kind of explained this one, but Arya is a much stronger character. She's not as wishy-washy or as not confident. Mm-hmm. She kills her first target. The first person they say kill, she kills him, and she'll gladly kills him.
Yeah.
And so far, she is still in training in the books, and she's currently a character in that play. She's just like a maid or something, but yeah. That's what, you know, that's where that's at. So she hasn't been dismissed, or they're not hunting her down, but I can still see it going similar with her character. But I think that's the one thing about this episode, TV wise, I felt that she didn't have enough training yet. It's like, oh, I don't think she should have betrayed him just yet, because yeah. She's really still the same person. I felt a couple more episodes of her getting some skills would have been necessary.
Yeah, for sure. It feels like she left unfinished. Like, I don't know how she's going to, one, fight off the wave coming after her. And to your point earlier, if she's always going to have this kind of hit out on her, like, how is she going to defend that indefinitely? I don't see how that's going to work. And that's what has me concerned with her future. She does seem like one of those characters that would almost be untouchable, but still, I'm like, I don't know. It could go poorly.
Right. I mean, I'll be mad if Arya gets killed, but that's just me. I think she's just got a really cool storyline, and I want to see where she ends up.
Yeah.
And then the last little bit, which I kind of touched on, was the Brothers Without Banners. In the show, in the books, they do not rally commoners against the Freys, because they're just out for justice. That's what they are. They're literally brothers without banners. They don't take sides. You know, if you're an awful person, you're going to die. That's kind of what it is. They're more commoners to themselves, their own army. So what they do is they capture lone Freys and hang them. They actually hang everybody. If you're some person who is... you're loyal to a family or a crest that's done bad or wrong, the Brothers Without Banners and Lady Stoneheart, they just kill you.
Goodness.
It's a small difference, but it's noteworthy, because I didn't make that. That didn't make sense to me. They were saying, like, Brothers Without, you know, when the Freys are telling Lord Frey that, the Brothers Without Banners are rallying against people against us, and it's like, well, not they are and they aren't.
Yeah.
So. And that's pretty much it for this episode.
Yeah, it's a lot of stuff. It is.
Yeah. We can still talk about R plus L equals J, but I think Jack was the one who really wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about it before. Any more? Oh, I'm sorry. The one theory that I've been seeing go around the internet is, and I'm blanking on the name now. I'm going to see if I can cheat on IMDb here, but the girl that's helping, is it Mira?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that she's Jon Snow's twin sister.
Yes, that theory going around. Do you think that's relevant or unlikely?
I think it's just a TV watchers fan theory, because they do look similar, the two actors, because they both have the dark curly hair thing, mm-hmm. but. As far as I remember in the book, she's really skinny and really short. She looks nothing like them, because she's from the Neck, and the Neck people are kind of inbred, and they're frog people.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's really, it's not relevant.
Now, do you think, because what they're saying is because it was her father and Ned that were, you know, there at the Tower of Joy, right?
Right, that is correct.
So that's I guess the basis of the theory is, one, the similarities maybe on the TV show, but two, it was the two people there at the Tower of Joy, so they could have each taken a twin, and then.
Right, it makes sense. Yeah, because how could Ned bring back two kids or whatever? They could have had twins.
But again, there's also right. that Danny and John are twins, so.
Right, and there's the one also that, I mean, the one that I like, but could never work for the show. Which is Danny is actually Danny's actually Lyanna and Rhaegar's child, but because she had silver hair, Ned couldn't take her back and say that that she's my child. So what he did was, if you remember the Tower of Joy scene, the guy had the two swords. He's the sword of the morning. He, when he went to return the sword to that family, the princess of that family had had an affair, supposedly, with Brandon Stark, which was Ned's older brother who died by the Mad King. And she had a child of dark hair. And in the book, she killed herself, and there's no really clue to what happened to the baby. And so a lot of people believe that she didn't really kill herself, but she made it up. And the baby that she had with Brandon Stark is Jon Snow, that he took back because it had dark hair, so he could pull that one off. Mm-hmm. And then he gave the baby that Lyanna had with Rhaegar to that family, and then they snuck them out of Dorne over to Essos, where Dany grew up. And the evidence, the damning evidence that kind of works with this theory, is that in book one, Dany constantly says, when she's with in her own thoughts, that all I want to do is go back to Pentos and live in the building, or Braavos. I want to go back to Braavos and live in the house with the red door and where the lemon tree grows outside. Now, the thing about that is that you've seen Braavos, where Arya is. It's little bitty islands. It's foggy. It's wet. Lemon trees would not grow in Braavos.
Mm-hmm.
So lemon trees only grow down in Dorne, where it's hot and sandy. Mm-hmm. So that shows that Dany at some point has been in the Seven Kingdoms and grew up there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a good theory, but I don't see it. It's very complicated for a TV show. But I really like that theory that there was a baby swap at some point.
Mm. The old baby swap. That'd be really interesting. It's definitely, it's cool. Mm-hmm. And it could show where the books will continue on and deviate from the TV show. But yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
Well, that's another fantastic What Happens in the Book Stays in the Book section for the show. After our sixth episode, and we're going to go into our seventh episode next week, and almost to the eighth and the ninth, where, you know, maybe the ish will go down. But who knows? The pacing is so much faster this season. Anything can happen episode to episode.
Absolutely.
But without any further ado, it's time to close out this one. If anybody would like to give feedback on the episode, you can just call it 385-309-0311. Once again, it's 385.
Call any time.
There you go. 385-309-0311. Call any time with your questions, comments, and or theories. Also, feel free to send us an email to lostpodcast@gmail.com. Once again, it's lostpodcast@gmail.com. Also, check out our website, janejack.com. All of our other shows are on there. You can find links to all of our feeds, including the whole enchilada feed that has everything on it. If you enjoy this podcast, please take a moment and give us a review over on iTunes if you have time. The reviews help us gain more listeners and become more powerful day by day. No, but we really appreciate it if you enjoy what we do, to give us a review. If you don't enjoy what we do, we appreciate the constructive criticism too. Send that to lostpodcast@gmail.com to see what we can do better. We want to send a special thanks to Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, and Brad from Chicago for contributing at a significant amount over on our Patreon page at patreon.com/janejack. If you'd like to become a patron today, you can do so by going to janejack.com, click the Become a Patron link, and contribute whatever you can, from $1 to $500. We have different reward levels at each increment there that you can see on our Patreon page, like exclusive Patrons Choice podcasts, hangouts, and more. Check it all out, patreon.com/JandJack. All right, that is it for this week's Game of Thrones podcast with Jay, Jack, and Nick. We'll see you next week. Hasta luego, and goodbye.